Adrian Peterson is taking care of things right now.
Down the sideline. If he can get loose, he's gone. Iligwe will score.
To Wesley Fields. Touchdown, Georgia Southern.
All right, Georgia Southern fans, welcome to another episode of Georgia Southern Extra. I'm Travis Jadon, the beat writer for Georgia Southern Athletics at the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. We got a loaded episode for you guys today. We got Mike Anthony on from the Statesboro Herald. Mike, you want to say hi to the folks?
Hey, folks.
Mike's joining us over the phone, and we'll talk Cure Bowl, ladies and gentlemen, in Orlando, Florida. Mike and I called it all along. We never had any doubts. Georgia Southern going to the Cure Bowl against Liberty University and the Fighting Jerry Falwells. Liberty comes in 7-5.
Jerry Falwell Juniors. Juniors.
Jerry Falwell Juniors. Let me mark that down in the notes. Falwell Juniors. Got it. 7-5 Liberty Flames. FBS Independent. First full year of competition. Second year at the FBS level. At the back end of this episode, you'll hear my interview with Damian Sordelet, who was really good scouting the Flames. He also gave me a pronunciation for his name that I thought was awesome. His name is Sordelet, S-O-R-D-E-L-E-T-T. He says, this is how you pronounce it. The cat was sort of let out of the bag. That's how he told me, and I'll never forget that. So Damian does a good job of scouting Liberty for us, and that's at the back end of this episode. Before we get started talking about the Cure Bowl, kind of what the Flames will offer, what Mike and I think are some keys, and then some other kind of general talking points around Georgia Southern, I wanted to let you guys know next week we'll have Mike and I will be giving our full preview for the bowl game. Later in the week, earlier in the week, we will have Justin Judy on from ESI 247 Sports to preview Wednesday's National Signing Day. So if you're listening to this on time, that's a week from today. We will have plenty of kind of names to watch, what the class looks like as a whole for 2020, and plenty more. But let's go ahead and jump into the Cure Bowl, Mike, just right off the rip, what are your original thoughts right now as we record on Tuesday night, 10 days out for Georgia Southern Liberty?
Well, I think it's exciting. Getting to a bowl game is everybody's goal, especially in the G5 conference. And Georgia Southern's lucky enough to where in its third bowl appearance, it's going to be going to its third different destination. I know that in some conferences and some teams, they kind of get pigeonholed into visiting the same one or two locations over and over again. And, you know, we're kind of new to this as a Georgia Southern fan base, but you've heard it from other teams, how it can get to be kind of old or, maybe deplete some of the attendance when you're visiting the same venue, playing the same teams over and over again. But again, third different destination, third different opponent. And, you know, Orlando, for the most part, in terms of where Georgia Southern's located, it's the closest bowl to Georgia Southern. So you would have to assume that a lot of people will be attending that, especially given the location. Can't wish for anything better than Orlando, especially if you've got more than just Georgia Southern fans. I know that when this went from being Mobile or Montgomery to Orlando, this turned for me from being an all expenses paid trip from the Statesboro Herald into that, but also me spending lots and lots of money to take two small children to Disney.
Well, yeah, we're going to spend some of it on the golf course, though, right, Mike?
I mean, I will, but you know how much visiting that damn mouse costs? That mouse is getting all the cheese.
Oh, wow. Well done. Well done. I'm clapping for you right now, Mikey. All right, Mike, I'll give you the choice. You want to start with Cure Bowl talk, or should we start with bigger picture stuff? I wanted to hit on the Sun Belt Conference and the bowl ties and kind of what Commissioner Keith Gill had to say prior to App State beating Louisiana in the title game. Which direction you want to go first?
Yeah, I'm sorry. What was that first one? I didn't catch it. I'm sorry. You cut out.
Either Liberty and the Cure Bowl. We could jump into them and kind of what that looks like, or we can talk about what a great Commissioner Keith Gill is and what a great conference the Sun Belt Conference is.
Yeah, let's start with the broad spectrum, the Sun Belt, and how we got to where we are, and then we can narrow it down to Liberty and the Cure Bowl from there.
I like that plan, Mike. I want to start by saying this. I completely understand the bowl tie-ins and kind of why they're there, and I'm, you know, pro bowl tie-ins. They're good for the conference. They're good for the teams. They're certainly good for revenue. So with that as kind of my disclaimer, what went down in the press conference prior to the Sun Belt title game last week was our friend of the show, Ethan Joyce from the Winston-Salem Daily Journal, basically asked Keith Gill, and kudos to all the reporters in that press conference, because him, Jay Walker from Louisiana, those guys asked questions that people want to know the answers to, instead of just kind of moseying along through the presser. Ethan Joyce asked Commissioner Gill about the potential for App State going to the Belk Bowl, which is in North Carolina. There was also chatter at some point in the season about App State potentially making a Cotton Bowl appearance. I think they're in the Cotton Bowl today, Mike, if Georgia Southern doesn't beat App State on the mountain. But that's a different topic.
Oh, I agree. And that's just tragic for them.
Yeah, we feel bad for them there, of course. But okay, so here's the thing, Mike, and I know you got a lot to say on this, but I'll just get mine out of the way. What Commissioner Gill said about this was so matter of fact, and kind of, you know, almost demeaning in a way to anyone that thinks a Sun Belt team is going to go at any point in time to a non-Sun Belt bowl. You know, you're basically just spreading rumors, according to Commissioner Gill, and that those aren't options. Real quickly, let me just read this real quick. We have five bowl. This is a quote from Commissioner Keith Gill. Quote, we have five bowl partners that we are working with. At the end of the day, that's where our teams will be. He goes on to say, it's certainly great discussion for the fans, but at the end of the day, they are really just rumors. We are trying to work with our partners to figure out where everyone fits in. The quote goes on. What I've been telling people is that we have five bowl contracts. We hear all the chatter on who is going where, but that's what it is. It's all chatter. The bottom line is we have our bowl contracts and five bowl teams will be somewhere in that bowl mix. That is the way it will play out when it is all said and done. So Commissioner Gill is telling us right there in that quote, it doesn't matter what a Sun Belt team does. These teams are going to win these five bowls. So, Mike, let me just say this. If this App State team this year isn't going to a non-Sun Belt bowl, quote-unquote better bowl, is this as good as it can get ever for a Sun Belt conference champ? If Georgia Southern goes out and loses to Ole Miss next year, loses at Boise State, and then wins every other game it plays, including the Sun Belt title, they're going to the bowl in New Orleans. That, to me, is kind of depressing. Is this as good as it gets for a Sun Belt team, Mike?
I would have to say that, you know, Commissioner Gill, whether or not you liked what he said or not, maybe he could have worded it better. I think that he's trying to play, you know, both sides of the card, because he's got these contracts for the Sun Belt tie-in bowls that he's beholden to. But at the same time, he's employed by all the ADs and presidents of all the universities in the Sun Belt that chose him. So, you know, you don't want to call anybody a liar because you know how these things work. But you and I and everybody else knows damn well that there were discussions for where App might have landed, if not the Cotton Bowl, somewhere else. All of it was out there. There's a reason it's out there. People don't just make this up out of the ether. And I think that, you know, Gill's comments probably had to do more with playing it safe and maintaining good relationships with the bowls that the Sun Belt's already tied into. And then if that, you know, line got dropped from the Belk Bowl or anywhere else where more money got involved and they could rip App out of the Sun Belt picture and take them somewhere else, and, you know, compensation would be coming the Sun Belt's way, then you have that discussion later on. But why ruffle any feathers until the time comes to break with one of those contracts? So, you know, I think that, you know, Gil could have handled it better. Maybe he's in a tough spot. Definitely he's in a tough spot. He's got to do what's best for the league. He's also got to do what's best for the contracts that are already signed. And it's a lot more defensible, I think, to just side with the ink and paper that's already signed and just say that you're going with that. It's really easy to defend that and then just kind of poo-poo away any rumors, whether or not they were more than rumors, of someone going somewhere else. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree on that, Mike, but here's the thing is,
there is more on the horizon for a Sun Belt champion that does really well. You know, App State kind of got into a perfect storm this year. Not only did they go 12-1, then won the Sun Belt championship. They got two P5 victories. Nevertheless, those teams were 10-14 combined, but that's still a nice feather to have in your hat. But, you know, they had the perfect storm, so you got to fight for them. So I really do think that in years to come, if someone does have another perfect storm of the year, you know, yeah, the Sun Belt and whoever the commissioner is going to be fighting behind the scenes for them to get as good as they can get. But if it becomes clear, as it was in App's case, that, you know, the Cotton Bowl wasn't going to be in play and, you know, the Belk Bowl was going to have its original supplement of ACC versus SEC, then why not do the prudent thing where you cover the backside of all the bowls that you're already tied into and say, we're sticking to that. So I really think that there probably was a lot more than anyone ever heard going on behind the scenes about getting App into a bigger name bowl, getting more money for them and for the conference. But once it was a little bit shaky as to whether or not that was going to be the case, it's really easy to default back into, these are the five bowls that we signed contracts with. We have a good relationship with all of them. We're going to stick to that. And everybody's just fine and dandy with that.
For sure. For sure. Okay. But here's what I want to ask, Mike. In your opinion, when Commissioner Gil says this, is he blissfully unaware that the conversations are actually happening, or is it an outright lie? I mean, it has to be one or the other. Either he didn't know that conversations were being had, or he just said they weren't. That's what I can't understand. This conference, obviously, before Commissioner Gil, has a track record of you know, being anti-transparency at all turns, at every turn. You know, this, I think of the Sun Belt voting, which I know you are the media rep for Georgia Southern for the Sun Belt voting. That's correct, right?
Yep.
Okay. So, and you agree with me on this. That vote needs to be transparent. We need to know who voted for it. It should be, because it adds, you know, if people know who you're voting for, you can't just throw in guys that don't deserve to be there. And, you know, there's several other examples of this conference not being transparent. That, to me, is what it comes down to. Just, you don't have to deny and make stupid the talks of App State going elsewhere. If I'm a Georgia Southern fan and I'm thinking about 2020 and the potential for Georgia Southern that is there, and there's, you know, gobs of potential for Georgia Southern next season, at the end of the day, Georgia Southern could beat both Power 5 teams on its schedule, or could beat Ole Miss. I guess Boise State, you know, not Power 5, but could beat Boise State at Boise State, could win in Oxford, win the conference it plays in. And from App State, 11-2 last year, 12-1 this year, you know, you have no shot at going anywhere else. And that shouldn't have been the message from the conference. I guess that was my only point, Mike.
Yeah, I think you're right to an extent. You know, the conference should keep up the fight as long as they can. I think the NCAA is really who's to blame here, because they're the ones that have made it very, very clear over the last two decades now.
I'm always okay with blaming the NCAA.
Yeah, ever since the BCS, long before the playoff, they've made it very clear that if you're a P5 team who's been bad forever and all of a sudden have a 12-0 year, then you get to walk into whatever. But if you're an established G5 team who's good every single year, it's just it's like the whiteboard gets erased every single season, you know. App, I'm sure that Georgia Southern fans don't want to hear me say it, but they have been great. They've been the standard in the Sun Belt, and the Sun Belt's been a better and better conference over the last 3, 4, 5 years, and somehow they don't get the credit for going, as you said, 11-2 last year, 12-1 this year. If you're a P5 team and you have that track record, all of a sudden you're just automatically penciled into a top 10, top 15 position to begin the next year just on assumptions, whereas App, even if they didn't just have their coach poach away, even if their athletic director might be on his way out the door, even if they brought back every single starter at every single position, that 12-1 and maybe 13-1 by the time they're done with bowl season, it would not do them one damn bit of good come next season. They would be maybe getting a vote or two and others receiving votes. And if they kept winning, they would get in the same place that they were, where they're in the 20s, maybe even in the teens if they really rattle it off. And they really don't have a chance. So in that regard, I give the Sun Belt a little bit of a pass in that, you know, they know that they're fighting a losing battle, but that's all the more reason to what you're saying, to where they should fight harder. Just what do you have to lose? Because it's obvious that anybody who is in the Power Five or the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, they're already regarding you as an afterthought. So why not just make it stink? Why not make some noise? Why not fight hard?
Yeah, I mean, why not? It just seems like the conference as a whole is unconcerned with fans and even media members. I don't want to say liking them, but basically agreeing with them or respecting them, because to use wording like that is pointed and is on purpose. Commissioner did say, quote, "But we want to respect our bowl partners. We want to make sure we respect the contracts we have." So that's kind of just where we are. So I get that. I get that point. You good with leaving that right there, Mike?
Well, yeah. I mean, just to the Sun Belt and Commissioner Gill's credit, you know, the work that the Sun Belt's done over the past 5, 6 years, you know, it used to be where they only had one bowl tie-in and they would routinely have 2, 3, even 4 bowl eligible teams. And
but we're not giving Keith Gill credit for that.
No, no, but I'm just saying, as a whole, I can see where the Sun Belt's coming from, even now with Gill there at the top, is that they do want to, you know, pay a lot of respect to the relatively new contracts and partnerships that they have, because they want to make sure, you know, right now the Sun Belt has 5 bowl eligible teams, and you know, 10 years ago, that wasn't something that was going to happen. You would have 2 or 3. And even when they had 2 or 3, sometimes one of those would go sitting at home because they didn't have a guaranteed tie-in. So I think there is something to be said for the Sun Belt and Commissioner Gill's behalf, that you really do want to stay friends with the people that decided to be friends with you. But yeah, it's tough. You got to play it on both sides. And you know, the Sun Belt, if they're going to continue to have 5 bowl eligible teams, that's only going to do them more and more justice, give them more and more credit when the bowls shake up, when they go to the pool system next year, whatever they devise beyond that. The Sun Belt, with its track record in bowl games, with its record the last couple of years of having bowl eligible teams and having plenty of them, that's going to give them more clout. And the more clout you have, the better bowls you get. The better bowls you get, the farther off the ledge you can step in demanding that when you do have a team like App, or hopefully in the future Georgia Southern, really exceeding goals, where you can really stick your neck out there and say, you know, we're good with the bowls that we have. We like them. We appreciate the partnership, but you really need to respect how good our best team is.
Yeah, and again, I think maybe, you know, I don't want to pretend like it's all on the conference. At some point, you know, someone, like, if you know, if App State wanted a Cotton Bowl berth, then go ahead and win every game, beat Georgia Southern, and you don't have to worry about it.
Right.
So that's good. The last thing I would say is that we know that the New Orleans Bowl gets the conference champ, and pretty much it's set in stone. I would think that Mobile has been getting the second pick. It'd be cool if we could go all the way down the line and just say who has the third pick, who has the fourth pick, and who has the fifth pick. And I guess when the Myrtle Beach Bowl comes into play. That'll shake all that up. Let's leave the bowl talk right there, Mike, if you're good with it.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about Liberty, man. Let's talk about Hugh Freeze and Buckshot Calvert and the nine Georgia natives on the Liberty roster. Mike, this is a good football team. I've seen now a full game of theirs on film and another half game. I don't want to say which two games, just because, but I've seen some of them, and on paper, you know, not even at the film, looking at the paper, the stats, it's clear what Liberty is, and it's yet another high-powered passing game for the Eagles secondary to have to defend. It's almost like, Mike, the Bulls lined up in a way where Georgia Southern now gets one last chance to kind of show that the one thing that they haven't done all season, that it was sort of a fluke, or that they can, in fact, defend high-powered passing games. Because to this point in the season, they haven't. And I don't know that it's more Georgia Southern secondary or it's who they played. You've played LSU. They have the number one receiver in the country in Ja'Marr Chase. You played Arkansas State. They have the number two receiver in the entire country in Omar Bayless. Now you get Liberty. And guess what they have? The number three receiver in the entire country, Antonio Gandy Golden. And he is from Georgia. So that, to me, Mike, is something that probably is more random than anything that all three of the top receivers in the country Georgia Southern will have faced. You know, just to add to that, Minnesota's receiver, his name's slipping my mind, but is he the one from Georgia?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's Bateman is number 12 in the entire country. So four of the top 12 and all three of the top three have been on Georgia Southern's schedule this season. I think Georgia Southern is going to really have to monitor this big play ability of Liberty, because here's what Liberty doesn't do. They don't throw it, you know, 60 times a game, 50 times a game. They throw it a lot. You know, they're throwing it 35 times-ish a game, which is a lot, but they will run it. And you cannot really sit back in, you know, nickel and prevent and you know, give a lot of cushion on the corners, because they'll run the ball and they're not really up tempo. So that's a little different for a passing attack. It's just a different looking kind of offense, a lot of read option. But Mike, I think the saving grace for Georgia Southern in this one could be that Buckshot Calvert, the Liberty quarterback, doesn't really have any ability to escape the pocket. He is really good at throwing the ball away. He's a big bodied guy. Kind of looks like, with pads on, behind center, kind of looks like Maine's quarterback, real big guy, powerful arm, has the ability to throw it away and kind of keep Liberty, you know, in a good down and distance. But he will throw it downfield and he won't escape the pocket. So I think you don't have to be so wary as you were with Dan Ellington for Georgia State. You don't have to be so wary of kind of containing the pocket and containing the edge. You can kind of just send blitzes where and when you want. But it's going to be real, real, real important for Georgia Southern to tackle after these guys make catches. You know, Gandy Golden is a premier guy. I you know, you'll hear from Damian Sordelet, and he said most NFL guys right now are thinking this guy's a day two draft pick in the NFL as a skill position. So I think this guy may be, outside of Ja'Marr Chase, the best receiver Georgia Southern has faced all season. We'll see how he matches up with Omar Bayless. But, you know, Monquavion Brinson, Mike, Kendall Vildor, Kendrick Duncan, Don Rutledge, these guys are going to have to play a really good football game to beat these guys. And I think what we might see, Mike, is that Georgia Southern kind of lets Gandy Golden do what he's going to do, and then they'll take away every other aspect, ideally.
from Liberty. Have you had a chance, Mike, to kind of look into Liberty and what they offer? And if so, how do you think Georgia Southern matches up in this one?
Yeah, first off, before I do anything else, I've got to congratulate Buckshot Calvert for taking over the long-held role of best college football quarterback name ever from Colt McCoy. He had it for a good decade or so, but I think Buckshot Calvert's got to take that title. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I'm good with it. He's got some quality nose furniture, too, with his mustache. It's not quite Lane Ecton or Travis Cunningham material. But it's
just serviceable. In terms of solid name and position.
Yeah, the name brand there, that's a quality name. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, as far as the matchups and how they pan out, I think that, good receivers have burned Georgia Southern throughout the year, and that's why they're as good as they're ranked. And they're going to have their hands full once again with Gandy Golden. I really think that kind of what you said about, the inability of Buckshot to make a lot of plays happen with his feet, I think you see a very similar defense played to what Georgia Southern did against Georgia State, where they knew that Dan Ellington would have been a threat to run, but he wasn't because of his knee. And so they weren't really trying to sack him. They weren't trying to overwhelm him, but they were trying to make him move a little bit, trying to get him off his spot. And a lot of times when you've got a very good passing game, it's not so much that the guy can just make a play from anywhere. It's that he's used to making a play from a certain spot at a certain time to a certain guy at a certain point in his route. And if you make any of that change, all the math changes, all the angles change, all the timing changes. So I really think you see a similar defense as Georgia Southern played against Georgia State, not necessarily to rack up 6-7 sacks, but to just make him a little uncomfortable, get him to move outside the pocket where he's not as used to making throws, getting those receivers to have to break off their routes, and then trusting, as you said, the athleticism of guys like Duncan and Vildor and Brinson to be able to just use their instincts, break on plays, make some plays, and hopefully just get the better of Liberty in the talent spectrum, which I think if you look at it on paper, Liberty definitely has some guys. They've got some studs, but I think overall on paper, Georgia Southern probably has the better overall athletic team. So that would always be my theory if I were a coach, and granted I'm not, but that would always be my go-to is if you're the more athletic team, just disrupt everything, make your athletes be the ones that can just make play or make the play become one where everybody has to just display some athleticism and you depend on your guys being the better athletes.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I think Georgia Southern does have the better talent pool, Mike. But to that end, if you look at Liberty's recruiting class for next season, they have 3 stars all over the field. Also, what they have, Mike, a bunch of Georgia natives. So that's something I'm starting to think about now. I don't know how often it comes down to this, but if Liberty and Georgia Southern were recruiting against each other down here in Georgia for kind of the 3-star tier of talent, this is something that in the future you could use if you beat Georgia Southern, or if Georgia Southern beats Liberty. I don't know how often that will happen, but that is, an aspect of this game, Mike. And I think that when you start looking at what Hugh Freeze, former Ole Miss coach, has done at Liberty in year one, you're starting to kind of see what they'll look like. And I know they have a transfer quarterback that will start for them next year. A guy named Malik Willis, I think, from Auburn, ? I think it's Auburn. So they're going to be really good. And I don't think that this will be the kind of team that folks are used to from a first year FBS team. They're scoring 33.7 points per game. That's tied for 31st in the country. They're allowing 29 points a game, tied for 77th. Here's a stat for you though, Mike. Allowing 192.7 yards a game to opposing rushers, or to opposing teams on the ground, that's ranked 100th in the country. So there you go. Georgia Southern could possibly have a large advantage there. One other thing, Mike, where Georgia Southern ranks in the top 15 in the country in time of possession. Liberty, 27 minutes, 42 seconds a game. That's number 112 in the country. Yeah, that's not great. But Mike, this to me is what stuck off the stat sheet. And then we'll wrap up Liberty until next week. First halves for Georgia Southern haven't been great, but their saving grace, and we've talked about this before, has been the second quarter. Liberty, in stark contrast, has not struggled at all out of the gates. They have yet to play an overtime game. They've scored 404 points all season and 134 points in the first quarter for Liberty. That's the most of any quarter. While Liberty has scored 134 points in the first quarter, Georgia Southern has scored 47. 129 points for Liberty in the second quarter, Georgia Southern 131. So as good as Georgia Southern has been in the second quarter, they've scored two more points than Liberty in the second quarter and a ton less in the first quarter. Georgia Southern can't really afford to get down in this game. We know that, like we've talked about that before, Mike. But I worry if Georgia Southern gets down 14-0. I think back to New Mexico State in 2018 on the road without Wesley Fields, without Sean Freeman. Georgia Southern got down 14-0. Then they waxed New Mexico State after that. But something like that, Mike, like if you have two good offensive possessions for Georgia Southern, but they end without points and, Liberty comes out and scores quickly twice, maybe. That to me would be worrisome for Georgia Southern. And the stats show, Liberty scoring 11 points per game in the first quarter, Georgia Southern scoring 3 a game in the first quarter. That to me shows that this is a team that gets out hot. I mean, they're scoring 22 points in the first half this season. Do you think, Mike, that we'll see Georgia Southern kind of note that coming into this game, note how fast Liberty starts, and what kind of strategy for Georgia Southern do you see in this game that might differ from other games? Last year, I remember, Mike, just one more thing, Peyton Backer in the bowl game was used for the first time all season as a sixth offensive lineman, a hybrid guy that would be in the backfield on certain plays. You see anything like that this year?
Yeah, I'm not sure what wrinkles are going to be thrown Liberty's way offensively for Georgia Southern, but I will agree with you that as far as the getting out of the gate goes, Georgia Southern, yeah, their defense has been pretty bend don't break, and you saw it even in the Georgia State game where, for my money, outside of the first two drives, they played it as well defensively as they could have, but that also involved that first Georgia State drive that got them into the end zone, that got them a 7-0 lead, and I see where you're coming from. That's exactly what they don't need to happen against Liberty, because they'll keep on, throwing to those receivers and trying to make some big plays, rack up the points, and Georgia Southern has been a little bit slow getting started offensively all season. So I really do think that there is some cause for concern, especially early in the game. Georgia Southern's defense just needs to pack a lunch and be prepared to go after it. And I think that another thing you mentioned, where Liberty is opposed to some other good passing offenses Georgia Southern's faced this year, they don't go at as quick of a pace, which is probably going to help the Eagles. That's been the bane of their existence, is when you get a quick, 7, 8, 9, 10-yard gain, and then you're on the ball 5 seconds later, snapping it again. The Eagles have struggled with that. That's not exactly Liberty's forte. And I think that if they keep that number of offensive plays down for Liberty, be it because Liberty doesn't move as fast or because Georgia Southern's offense can take up more time, I think that just makes that defensive front for the Eagles that much stronger. That allows them to get pressure without committing as many guys to the blitz. And if they can do that, I mean, that's the recipe for success, is Georgia Southern's offense, while it's not explosive, it's not racking up 50 points a game, it has looked a lot better over the last month in terms of keeping drives alive, scoring touchdowns in the red zone instead of field goals. If they continue to do that, I really think that it's going to put the pressure on Liberty to give that offense, while it can you know, move quick and score some points, it's going to take away from the number of opportunities they have, and they already are used to not having a lot of time to do it in. I think that if Georgia Southern's offense keeps going, or if it starts quickly, it's going to suck the air out of the clock. It's going to really take away from the possessions Liberty has. It's going to make things tough on the Flames. And to me, that's the key for Georgia Southern's victory, is play a good first one or two series of defense, and the offense has to look as good as it looked over the last couple of games.
Yeah, and just on the offense quickly, Mike, I think it's going to be really, really important for Georgia Southern to be gaining 4, 5, 6 yards a carry, but I think it's important that they bust a couple of long runs. And by long runs, I mean at least more than 10 yards. Liberty has been bad defending the run. Got a stat for you, Mike. Liberty is ranked 96th in the country in allowing runs of 10 or more yards. They've allowed 69 runs of 10 or more yards on the season.
Nice.
That is nice. Georgia Southern, meanwhile, is number 7 in the country. They have exactly 100 yards or 100 rushes of 10 yards or more on the season. That's, again, number 7 in the entire country. So there you go. Georgia Southern and their somewhat weak passing defense versus Liberty's really, really good quarterback receiver tandem and their really high powered passing offense. And then on the other side, you got Georgia Southern running the ball versus a bad run defense. I like Georgia Southern in this game. We'll get more into that next week. Mike, one last thing before we wrap up. Do you think there are any players for Georgia Southern in this game who sit out, not because of a draft or anything like that, but because they might be a little gimpy and there's no need to risk it versus Liberty? This is a trend that's growing around college football. I don't know where I stand on it. I would think that the way to decrease the number of guys sitting out across the country would be to increase the importance of bowl games. I don't know how you do that, but that's a step. Do you think anyone sits out in this one, Mike? I think there are a couple of guys. I think Raymond Johnson, the junior who sat out last game with injury. Kendall Vildor has been gimpy. He's certainly got, you know, pro potential. Montquavion Brinson has been really good. There's no way you're keeping him out of this game, I don't think. Who else, Mike? Do you see anyone sitting out of this game?
Well, I mean, I think you're going to have the same bumps and bruises that Coach Munster talked about throughout the last, you know, half of the season. But I think that the one thing that the G5 teams have going for them at this point is that, with a couple of, you know, rare exceptions, you don't really have underclassmen or even seniors who are just guaranteed first-day NFL draft picks. So where, you know, a guy for Ohio State or Oklahoma or Alabama or somebody from a football factory that has, you know, 2 or 3 guys drafted in the first round every year, and a lot of that has to do with being helped along by where they're coming from, you know, they can afford to say, hey, my knee's not right, I'm not going to risk it. You know, I want my, you know, rookie contract to be worth as much as it can be. I think that when you look at guys in the G5 conferences, even if they're consensus draft pick, you know, the difference between, you know, 2nd and 3rd and 4th round or being 6th round or undrafted, you know, that's a lot of guaranteed money. So I really think that in their case, I wouldn't worry too much about them saying, hey, I could go, but I'm not going to. I think that any of those guys that have any questions about where they might go or if they might go in the draft, they're going to go out and play.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just, you know, that is going to be on the minds of folks if we see once the game starts that people aren't, that someone's not playing, especially if they're, especially if they're a senior. You good with leaving everything right there, Mike, till next week?
Yeah, we'll pick it up in Disney World.
No doubt. How would I tell someone to follow your stuff, Mike, if I wanted to do that?
If you wanted to do that, you could tell them that they can log on to statesboroherald.com. You can read me in print on the Statesboro Herald. We've got videos coming out on the website throughout the week. And on game day, you can follow me on Twitter at @HeraldGSSports.
All right, I'll mark it down so I can tell him, Mike. For us at the Savannah Morning News, find all of the Georgia Southern coverage at savannahnow.com/sports. You can also log on to savannahnow.com's homepage, and on the right side of the top of the page, you'll see a little button for you to click on to subscribe to the Georgia Southern newsletter. And on Twitter, follow me at JadonSportsSMN and email tjadon@savannahnow.com. All right, early next week, we'll have a preview for you for National Signing Day on Wednesday. Then we'll have our full-length bowl preview game from Disney World. Mike's got to give me three strokes on each side. We will see you guys next week. Thank you for listening. Here's my interview with Damian Sordelet of the Lynchburg News and Advance. Thank you. All right, Georgia Southern fans, we have a new offer for you guys at savannahnow.com. We want you guys to check it out. It's a newsletter focused on Georgia Southern athletics and Georgia Southern athletics only. This is a free opportunity for you guys to get caught up on all the latest news on the Eagles, whether it be on the football field, basketball court, baseball field, or what have you. But go join the mailing list for the newsletter, and this is how you do it. Go to savannahnow.com and look on the right side of the homepage, click Get Our Newsletters, and go from there. The newsletter will have a blog post once a week, as well as other relevant Georgia Southern stories, opportunities to subscribe to the podcast, and other insider notes that you can't find anywhere else. Subscribe today. All right, we're joined now by Damian Sordelet of the Lynchburg News and Advance. Damian covers Liberty Athletics for the News and Advance. He's the beat reporter there, and he's going to join us to give us a scouting report on the Flames as they come in at 6-6, heading to the Cure Bowl. Damian, are they 6-6 or 7-5?
Chavs, they are 7-5.
All right, let me start that over.
Okay.
As Liberty comes in at 7-5, same record as Georgia Southern into the Cure Bowl. A lot of common opponents. Want to get you guys all the scouting report you need on the Flames. So, Damian, thank you for joining us.
Travis, I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, man, we're excited for the Cure Bowl. I'm excited personally to not be going to Mobile or Montgomery again. One of the Sun Belt, or two of the Sun Belt Conference bowl tie-ins are in Montgomery and Mobile, and I just have a feeling I'll have a little bit more fun in Orlando than Mobile or Montgomery. Damon, can you first kind of let our listeners know how this season has gone for Liberty? Second year in FBS, first full year. I think they were 6-6 last year, 7-5 this year, making a bowl game too impressive under first year head coach Hugh Freeze, who started the season and a weird manner, you know, coaching from the hospital bed. That's an interesting story for people to look up. How has this season gone, Damian, in your view, for Liberty and kind of Hugh Freeze's first go around?
It's gone about as where you would expect it to go. I, at the beginning of the year, predicted 8-4 with a win over Rutgers. And if Liberty didn't have to punt the ball twice against the Scarlet Knights, Flames actually had a chance to win that game, but porous run defense really hurt them in that one. Rutgers was able to pick up 5-6 yards of carry and really control the clock. And as we get into more scouting report, that'll be something that you can probably circle back to as a strength that Georgia Southern will have going into this one. But as you mentioned too, Hugh Freeze opened the season August 31st at home against Syracuse, coaching from a hospital bed in the coach's booth. Earlier in the month, I believe it was after the first team's first scrimmage on August 10th, he began experiencing some severe back spasms. Thought it was, you know, typical of what he had experienced in the past, and then woke up the next morning, back was feeling worse. He was admitted to the Lynchburg General Hospital, and throughout that time, it wasn't getting better. And then through consultation with Ben Carson, who is now the HUD director, and, you know, a renowned neurosurgeon, they determined he needed to be transferred to another hospital to receive care. He was going to be admitted to Johns Hopkins under Carson's care, but he then went to UVA Medical Center in Charlottesville, which is about an hour up the road from Lynchburg, and they flew in Dr. Dilan Elagala from Scottsdale, Arizona, to perform the surgery. And during that time, they found he had a staph infection there in the herniated part of his back. They removed the infection, also fixed the disc in his back. And that recovery has taken a long time, but the first game coach from a hospital bed, second game from a medical chair against Louisiana Lafayette, and then he was back on the sidelines the following week against Buffalo at home. And literally lost the first two games. Offense did not perform well in either contest, but then once he was on the sideline, able to get a better feel of the game, have an idea of what he needed to do play calling wise. The offense began to take off. Liberty reeled off five straight wins against Buffalo, FCS opponent Hampton. Then they beat New Mexico State, a common opponent between the two teams. And then after an off week, beat Maine, another common opponent between Liberty and Georgia Southern. And then that began a difficult stretch where they were at Rutgers, at UMass, at BYU, an off week before going to play at Virginia. They went 1-3 in that stretch, you know, from a coaching standpoint. And, you know, from my standpoint, it should have gone 2-2, but, you know, lost the one to Rutgers, put up eye-popping numbers against UMass, and then played competitively with BYU, and then, you know, had control of the game at UVA until an interception early in the second quarter gave the Cavaliers momentum. And UVA, as we saw, as the Coastal Division champions of the ACC, really turned the tide on that one. And then Liberty became bowl eligible with a win, a really convincing win over New Mexico State at home in the finale. So the season's been, you know, on par. I mean, certainly the beginning of the season with Freeze and the medical issues really detracted from what the team was doing. But, you know, once you got on the sideline and things started to get have a little bit more sense of a normality, you know, things, you know, leveled off, and, you know, you saw the team perform much better on offense. And defensively, still, you know, gave up, you know, too many explosive plays for their likings, but you saw some strides that they were able to make. On Scott Simon's first season, calling the shots there as defensive coordinator.
Right. Damian, obviously, you know, Hugh Freeze has gone through a lot of stuff, but, you know, I think it's easy to look at Liberty as a team and kind of become a little fascinated with, or at least this was easy for me to become fascinated with Freeze and his relationship with the university and Dr. Jerry Falwell and things like that. But on the field, Liberty has some really good football players. And I think that when we hear that a team has just now moved up in similar fashion with Georgia Southern, just because you're young on the FBS level doesn't mean you don't have the talent pretty quickly to compete. From Hugh Freeze's 2020 recruiting class as it stands right now, it looks like they're bringing in even more talent. For Liberty on the field, who are some players? We'll start with the offense, if you don't mind. Who are some players that Georgia Southern fans should look out for? And kind of what will they look like offensively? It looks to me on the stat sheet, at least, that it is an air raid, and the two guys are for sure this receiver and quarterback duo, seniors for Liberty. What do they look like offensively?
Yeah, you hit the nail right on the head there with the offensive attack. It's more of a tempo attack. It's not the air raid offense that you see some teams use, similar to New Mexico State. That's more of an air raid attack. Liberty's more of a tempo attack where they use a lot of RPOs, and, you know, a lot of the plays that they call are normally runs, but, you know, when you're checking at the line of scrimmage and you see something, you'll go with the pass, and that's what Liberty has been able to do quite well this year. And you mentioned the quarterback wide receiver duo of Buckshot Calvert and Antonio Gandy-Golden. This year they've been much more in sync than they have been in the previous 3 years, even though, you know, the previous 2 years when Gandy-Golden was going with more than 1,000 yards in those years, they were in sync. But Calvert this year has really done a very good job of limiting his turnovers. Last year he had 15 interceptions to 18 touchdowns. This year, that number is 26 touchdowns to 5 interceptions. And that's been a reason why Liberty's offense is so much better. And then Gandy Golden, who was born in Chicago, but attended Paulding County High School at Dallas, Georgia. And that might be a name familiar to fans down in your neck of the woods. He's 6'4", 220-pound receiver. He was a Biletnikoff Award semifinalist this year. Is third in the nation receiving yards with, I believe it's 1,300-plus receiving yards this year. He has 9 touchdown receptions. And he is a trending pick to go likely on the second day of the NFL draft because of his size, his ability to catch passes. Not many know this, but he has a background in gymnastics when he was a tumbler in Chicago, and then, you know, latched onto football when he moved down to Georgia. And he's a guy that is a matchup nightmare because he has the ability to win most every jump ball, great on the back shoulder routes, and he has shown the ability to have a double move, start in the slot, be in the X or the Z position, go in motion, which is something which he didn't really do in the first 3 years. But now with a new coaching staff, they're trying to move him around, get him in different spots, and that's really helped him out. Frankie Hickson, his running back, is 88 yards away from his second straight 1,000-yard season. He has really emerged as a guy who can be a reliable option there in the RPO. He ran over New Mexico State for 196 yards and 4 touchdowns in the regular season finale. You know, he even put up 88 yards and a score against Virginia the week prior. So they're able to run the ball if you go with like a quarters defense or try to go with a cover 3 or something like that where you have one less person in the box. And Liberty's has shown it can run the ball. And then Joshua Mack, a transfer from Maine, who led the FCS in rushing yards per game in 2017, has proven he can run the ball well behind Hickson. So while Gandy Golden and Calvert received most of the attention, that the running duo has been able to put up some impressive yards as well. And that's something that Georgia Southern will need to find the balance to try to make sure, you know, you contain the passing attack while making sure the running game doesn't get going, because once that gets going, that creates more play action opportunities to go over the top.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's something that I think is going to be key in this game, Damian, is Liberty's ability to hit over the top. I know they are one of the better teams in the country as far as bigger passing plays goes. Georgia Southern, quite the opposite defensively. That seems to be probably the only thing that Georgia Southern really has a glaring weakness in, is allowing the big play in the pass. And to that end, Liberty, number 8 in the country with 29 passing plays of 30-plus yards. Georgia Southern is number 111, allowing 13 plays, passing plays of 40-plus yards. So that kind of, to me, could be one of the keys. Quickly, I wanted to hit one more thing on the offense, Damian. If Buckshot Calvert is pressured, if he is hurried, it doesn't seem like, at least on tape that I've seen, that he has escapability. He is good at throwing it away and kind of getting rid of it, but is it fair to say that he's not the most mobile quarterback?
Well, it's fair to say that. He's not like Malik Willis, who is the Auburn transfer, who's sitting out this year, who is a true dual threat guy and someone who Liberty is going to get a chance to see next year. But he has improved his footwork in the pocket and his ability to keep his eyes downfield while he's maneuvering around. There's been a lot of instances this year where he's been able to give a dead leg to an opponent and, you know, spin out of, you know, potential tackle behind the line of scrimmage or sack, and then be able to quickly set his feet and fire a pass down the field. That's something that really struggled last year in the first year at the FBS level for the Flames, and making sure he had the mobility in the pocket, because you're playing behind the line that was all recruited as FCS players. So it's, you're going against a line that, you know, while there's great continuity there, you know, they weren't recruited, you know, to play at this level. So Calvert has really improved on his footwork. The sacks were a major factor early in the season, particularly in the first two losses. Syracuse had 7 sacks of Calvert in the opener, and Louisiana got, I believe, 2 or 3 more. But that number has drastically gone down as the season has progressed, just because, you know, the line's gotten better and Calvert's been able to move around to extend plays. But, you know, pressure will be an issue. UVA showed it was able to get pressure on him a couple weeks ago. And, you know, he had one of his worst statistical outings of the season, and because of that pressure. So that's something that Georgia Southern, which, you know, has done a really good job of that this year. And, you know, they did a good job of that against Appalachian State to record that upset. So that's something that, you know, if they can replicate that, that will certainly hinder what Liberty's able to do offensively.
All right, and let's do a question on the defense, Damian, and then we'll get your kind of outlook, you know, as we sit, as we record this on Tuesday night, 11 days out from the game. Defensively, obviously, Liberty not known for their defense, but unlike most high-scoring offensive teams, they do seem to have some guys on that side of the ball. But one thing, Damian, that I thought was interesting, hearing Hugh Freeze's comments immediately after learning of the Cure Bowl, I thought it was interesting that there wasn't a lot of talk about Georgia Southern's option offense. And the reason I say that is because, you know, every time we hear from another coach, you know, it's almost always talking about something to do with the option offense when you talk about Georgia Southern. I haven't seen a lot of that from Liberty. Obviously, this was, you know, super early on after learning of, you know, the bowl game and the bowl matchup. Have you heard, you know, this far out anything from Liberty about how they plan on going about preparing for the option, or kind of what the plan will be for them? I don't know that they're going to try to reinvent the wheel. I'm sure they're just going to want to tackle well and scheme well, but what do you think about that and kind of how Liberty is built defensively to handle the option?
That's a good question, Travis. And, you know, when we talked to Liberty Sunday and we only got a chance to talk to Hugh Freeze and a couple of the players, they were still in limbo about where they were going. They weren't set on the Cure Bowl. So there were a myriad of options out there. But with the Cure Bowl, they had tapes ready to go for two teams, Arkansas State and Georgia Southern. So Freeze had to get on a plane within, I think it was less than an hour after he met with the media following the selection show, to get on the road recruiting. And he said, I'm glad we got Georgia Southern film because I'm going to spend my time watching that before I land. So, you know, we'll find out later this week when we meet with the team and the defensive staff about what they're going to do. But, ideally, they want to tackle well, and they want to be able to limit Georgia Southern's ability to pick up 4 yards of carry, because that's, you know, a triple option game plan. You want to control the ball and make sure you eat up as much clock and keep the chains moving. So, and a key for that is Liberty's got to be able to get some pressure up the middle and be able to make sure Georgia Southern is not on schedule in terms of down and distance. And that will be interesting to see, because Liberty hasn't faced a triple option team this year. And they played a triple option team last year in Army, but that was with a different coaching staff, albeit with a lot of the same players. And Liberty went with a 5-2 front in order to try to get as much pressure up front. And, you know, Army did have some success moving the ball. Liberty was within a couple plays away from, you know, really asserting control of that one, because I think the defense started playing well, but then just tired out as the game went on. But if you want to look at defense, it starts up front with Jesse Lemonnier. His older brother, Corey, played at Auburn earlier this decade, was a draft pick after his junior year with the Tigers.
Lemonnier, wow, I didn't know that. I remember that Lemonnier name now that you say that.
Yeah. Lemonnier has 8.5 sacks this year. He has close to 20 in his 2 years at Liberty after transferring from Ventura College out on the West Coast. He's a guy up front that, you know, whether he's playing at Bandit on one side or he's at end on the other, that's someone you got to keep an eye out for. at linebacker, Solomon Ajayi. His brother, Jay Ajayi, I believe was just recently signed in the NFL. He was on the Eagles Super Bowl winning team as a running back.
And just quickly, Damian, as a Dolphins fan, I got to say, he was a Dolphin first.
Yes, he was. I can tell you, Solomon has a lot of Dolphins gear because he enjoyed going down to South Beach for games.
Can't blame him.
But to his point, he's the Mike linebacker. He, you know, kind of runs that defense. He's also another junior college transfer who was technically in his third year at Liberty because he redshirted in 2017. He's a guy who, you know, they turn to for leadership. And then on the back end, Elijah Benton has been a tackling machine for them as a former walk-on turned scholarship guy. He's been playing primarily at Rover. We might see him move around quite a bit because he's one of those bigger body guys, 6'2", 205, that, you know, fits run gaps really well. And if you want to go back to common opponents, he missed the game against Louisiana Lafayette because of concussion. And there were a lot of plays where he would have fit the gap really well and made tackles at the point of attack. But because he wasn't in there, the Raging Cajuns were able to pick up yards in bunches. So his ability to be on the field healthy will be a big boom for Liberty as well. If you want to know about how much Liberty's recruiting has really helped this year, you look at defense. They've been starting a true freshman cornerback in Keytrell Clark, opposite of Jimmy Faulks. And then you have Trayshawn Clark, has been starting opposite of Lemonnier at one of the defensive end positions. And then you throw in more freshmen, like Tavion Land, the program's first four-star recruit. He's been playing a lot at nickelback. And then you add a true freshman like Micah Glaze at Rover, Chris Megginson, whether it be at free safety or cornerback. So they've been trying to play a lot of young guys, and they have a lot of younger guys too, other freshmen, who still have a couple games left of eligibility before hitting the four-game mark so they can retain the year and be redshirt freshmen next year. So I have a feeling they'll play guys like Malik Caper, Aubrey Williams, some of those guys on defense to give them some more depth, because that will definitely be something that will be a focal point for Liberty to make sure they have the bodies to constantly send waves to try to defend that triple option.
Yeah, and I think that last name you hit on, Aubrey Williams, I think he is a Brunswick, Georgia native. That's right down here in our neck of the woods. One of nine Georgia natives on this team. And obviously, Hugh Freeze has a track record of recruiting well in Georgia. So I have a feeling that number nine may increase as time goes along. Quickly, Damien, any health issues for Liberty that kind of stand out? Anybody that will be back for this game, or that will miss this game, or they're mostly up in the air?
Well, right now they're all relatively healthy. They got out of the regular season. I think the only player dinged up was backup left guard Ethan Crawford, but he did play in the finale against New Mexico State. Outside of that, they're all pretty healthy in terms of guys who are going to play. So that's something that is going to help. The fact that they'll have 3 weeks off will help healing, but also, you know, it'll keep them sharp as well. So from a health perspective, this team should be full go for Georgia Southern.
All right, Damien, do you want to let everyone know how to track your stuff and kind of how to follow you in these days leading up to the bowl game?
Yeah, absolutely. You can follow us on at our website at newsadvance.com. There's a drop-down menu that you can go to LU Sports, and that's where all my content will be for Liberty football leading up into the Cure Bowl next weekend. You can also follow me on Twitter at Damien Sordelet. And those are the two best ways to follow me and follow along the work. So that way you can get caught up with everything you need to know about Liberty football heading into the program's first meeting as FBS opponents. Since Georgia Southern does have a 3-0 edge when the teams were both in the FCS ranks.
Awesome, Damien. Well, hey, we really appreciate you helping us scout the Flames. And I'm sure we will either get back with you next week to preview the game once again, or if not, then we will certainly see you in Orlando at Exploria Stadium. So thanks again for joining us.
Travis, I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, he will. Adrian Peterson is taking care of things right now.
Down the sideline. If he can get loose, he's gone. Iligwe will score.
Wesley Fields. Touchdown. Georgia Southern.